Continuing with NHR Volume 2, Chapter 2 on Training, we'll begin on page 132 and finish on page 154 today. So let's begin. It had been here at the Rikyo-bo Lodging Temple that Josei Toda had worked until almost the final moments of his life to convey the spirit of Kosenryufu to his closest disciple, Shinichi Yamamoto. Shinichi remembered how he had been reproached by Toda just before that memorable day, March 16, 1958, the occasion at the head temple that Toda had called a dress rehearsal for Kosenryufu. Out of concern for Toda's frail health, Shinichi had had an open litter built to carry him. When Toda saw it, however, he rebuked Shinichi, saying, "It's far too big. Of what use can I be in battle on this?" In this way, he had taught his young disciple with strict compassion how important it was to apply careful planning and consideration to any real struggle. On another occasion, when Shinichi had reported to Toda that youth division members had taken a corrupt and decadent priest to task, Toda had announced with the last of his remaining strength, "We must under no circumstances allow the true law of Nichiren Daishonin to perish. I, therefore, want you to fight resolutely against any evil that entrenches itself in the priesthood. Shinichi, heed my words. You must never retreat a single step. You must never let up in your struggle against evil." With each instruction, Toda pointed the way to eternally protecting the integrity of the true law and realizing Kosenryufu. Each was a cry from the very depths of his life for the sake of the future, a call deriving from his own lifelong struggle. Toda infused his entire being into the training and education of his disciple. Recalling the days when his mentor had been alive, Shinichi's eyes grew moist. He understood only too well the sentiments that had prompted the second high priest, Nikko Shonin, to leave behind a list of admonitions to ensure that the Daishonin spirit was passed down unaltered to future generations. Nikko Shonin had seen the deplorable way in which his colleagues, the other five senior priests, had behaved after the Daishonin's death, even though they all had all sworn together to achieve Kosenryufu as disciples of the Daishonin. Fearing oppression by the ruling authorities, these five cowardly priests proclaimed themselves to be the disciples of the Tiantai. They even obliterated the Daishonin's writing by reprocessing the paper he had written on into fresh paper for their own use. In this and other ways, they violated the integrity of the true law. In particular, one senior priest, Mimbu Niko, the chief instructor of priests at Mount Minobu, allowed various slanderous acts by the local steward Hakiri Sanenaga to go uncensured. Among his many offences, Hakiri commissioned a carving of Shakyamuni Buddha as an object of worship. Eventually, the growing hostility of Mimbu Niko forced Nikko Shonin to leave Mount Minobu. One can only guess how the Daishonin's successor must have felt. Through the generous support and sincere devotion of the eminent lay follower Nanjo Takemitsu, Nikko Shonin constructed head temple Taiseikiji at Fuji in Suruga province, which is present-day Shizuoka prefecture, and thus protected the Daishonin's Buddhism. Nikko Shonin took into account, however, that even the pure flow of the Fuji school might one day cease, should faith be lost and the water allowed to become sullied. This could perhaps have been the reason why Nikko Shonin left the admonitions as eternal guidelines for faith. As Shinichi pored over the document, he was deeply moved. He was struck powerfully by Nikko Shonin's fierce wish for the eternal prosperity of the law embodied in this, his last will and testament. Shinichi's emotion grew into a passionate pledge to create a great river of Kosenrufu that would flow forever into the future. It was the second day of the training, and the sky was clear and bright. Shinichi applied himself to training the young people, moving energetically from one event to another, from a question and answer session with young women's division members to a young men's division sumo wrestling match. As it grew dark, he went with the board of directors to visit Josei Toda's grave at the head temple. Shinichi prayed deeply, pledging to realize the membership goal of 3 million households while resolving to accomplish his cherished vision for Kosenrufu. On their way back, General Director Koichi Harayama said to Shinichi, "With the formation of new chapters and the present growth of the organization, many more leaders will be needed. But in reality, there just aren't that many capable people. For example, I feel that today's chapter chiefs are a far cry from their counterparts in the past." "I agree," said Shinichi. "Capable people definitely exist. The question is whether our leaders can find them." "Oh. People can't help judging others according to their own standards. For example, if you're a logical and systematic person, you'll probably see ability in those who are also methodical and analytical. And if you're impulsive and not prone to giving matters a great deal of thought, you'll tend to regard those with similar tendencies as capable. Also, if you're extremely self-centered and full of your own importance, you cannot appreciate people's strengths or good points. Instead, you'll see only their faults. Ultimately, the ability to find capable people depends on whether we can see others' strengths. And the only way to do this is to develop our own life condition. If anything, I feel we have a multitude of capable members, each one like a precious diamond. They simply need to be polished. It takes a diamond to polish a diamond. That's why we must devote every ounce of our being to this task. This is what I'm trying to do with all my might right now." A cool breeze rustled through the cedar grove in the lingering light. Filled with resolve, Shinichi gazed up at the towering trees. He was scheduled to deliver a lecture at 6:30. People steadily filed into the Grand Lecture Hall auditorium. By the time the meeting began, the room was filled to capacity. When Shinichi arrived, their faces lit up, eyes blazing with seeking spirit. The lecture began. These 26 admonitions were written by Nikko Shonin, then 88 years old, on January 13th, 1333, just 25 days before he died on February 7. Therefore, we should regard this document as his final will and testament. Shinichi's resonant voice echoed throughout the auditorium. He continued, "These cautionary articles were originally intended for priests of the Fuji school. However, the Soka Gakkai was strictly abided by Nikko Shonin spirit, which the articles embody." What exactly is that spirit? In the preface to his 26 admonitions, Nikko Shonin clearly states, "I will here set forth certain articles for the sake of later students of Buddhism. This is solely because I treasure the Daishonin's golden words regarding Kosenrufu. Such dedication to realizing Kosenrufu was his fundamental spirit. The Soka Gakkai spirit is exactly the same. Kosenrufu means to establish, through the compassionate teachings of Nichiren Daishonin, a world in which all people can live in true happiness and peace. It is our mission to accomplish this." After explaining the preface, Shinichi then launched into a detailed discussion of each article. Article 1. The doctrines of the Fuji school must not differ in the least from the teachings of the late master. The doctrines of the Fuji school are the teachings of Nikko Shonin. These doctrines, he says, do not diverge in the slightest from the Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism and accord exactly with the Daishonin's instructions. In short, the basic guiding principle of the Fuji school lies in not diverging from the teachings of the late master Nichiren Daishonin. This article may therefore be regarded as documentary proof that faith connected directly to the Daishonin means correctly upholding the true law. Shinichi then went on to explain each article, growing increasingly passionate about his subject as his lecture progressed. Article 13. Until Kosen Rufu is achieved, propagate the law to the full extent of your ability without begrudging your life. In his detailed biography of Nikko Shonin of the Fuji school, the 59th high priest, Nichiko Shonin, viewed this article as one of the most important set forth by the Daishonin's immediate successor and proclaimed it as an eternal law and a rule of fundamental and undying importance. The Soka Gakkai has embraced the spirit embodied in this article. We have advanced towards Kosen Rufu with the single-minded devotion it calls for. Throughout his persecution by the military authorities during World War II, the first Soka Gakkai president, Tsunesaburo Makiguchi, remonstrated with the state, urging it to renounce the erroneous teachings it had embraced. On a bitterly cold autumn day, he died in prison for his beliefs at age 73, bringing to a close a life of selfless dedication to the law. He revitalized the spirit of not begrudging one's life to spread the true law in modern times. His selfless and noble spirit ensured that the spirit of Daishonin, Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism, once on the brink of total obliteration, will continue to shine on forever. In his actions lies concrete proof of the legitimacy of the Soka Gakkai. The second Soka Gakkai president, Josei Toda, also spent 2 years in prison. During his incarceration, he experienced a profound awakening that he was one of the bodhisattvas of the earth who appeared at the ceremony in the air, and upon his release from prison, he gave his life to realizing Kosen Rufu. Shinichi spoke with even greater energy. When President Toda stood amid the war-ravaged landscape on his release from prison, he made a solitary vow to accomplish Kosen Rufu. His mission as a bodhisattva of the earth burned like a brilliant flame in his heart. When he was inaugurated as president in 1951, he pledged to realize a membership of 750,000 households, a goal achieved in less than 7 years. With this achievement, he made Kosen Rufu an attainable reality for the first time. Thus, 700 years after the Daishonin's passing, President Toda and Soka Gakkai opened the way for the unprecedented propagation of the Daishonin's Buddhism. Hasn't the Soka Gakkai alone put this admonition into actual practice? This proves unequivocally that the Soka Gakkai is the only organization directly linked to the Daishonin, that it is indeed a gathering of bodhisattvas of the earth. This being the case, it is our mission as well to dedicate our lives to Kosen Rufu and to persistently strive for its realization. I want you to know that this is where genuine faith and a life of supreme joy are found. Shinichi continued, as for the phrase, propagate the law to the full extent of your ability without begrudging your life, we are doing just that when we make Kosen Rufu our prime purpose in life and work as emissaries of the Gohonzon to spread the Daishonin's teaching in ways that accord with our circumstances. When we resolve to dedicate our lives to Kosen Rufu, we will gain energy and strength. When we show others the victory and happiness we have achieved, we are making our personal contribution to Kosen Rufu. This is the meaning of propagating the law to the full extent of our ability. Shinichi continued his lecture without pausing to wipe the perspiration from his forehead. Article 14. As for practitioners who treasure the law more highly than their own lives, even if they are but humble teachers of the law, you must hold them in great esteem, showing them the same respect as you would a Buddha. The phrase, practitioners who treasure the law more highly than their own lives, is fairly self-explanatory. It refers to people who act out of total devotion to the true law. The phrase, showing them the same respect as you would a Buddha, appears in the last chapter of the Lotus Sutra. Here, Shakyamuni tells Bodhisattva Universal Worthy that should he encounter a person who accepts and upholds the Lotus Sutra, he should rise and greet him from afar, showing him the same respect as he would a Buddha. This is the final teaching preached by Shakyamuni in the Lotus Sutra. Nichiren Daishonin declared it to be the ultimate legacy of the Lotus Sutra. They are words of truly profound significance. Here, Nikko Shonin indicates that those who uphold and spread the Lotus Sutra exactly as the Buddha teaches are the most praiseworthy of people and should be accorded the same respect as a Buddha. Most important is what we have done for the sake of the law, our practical efforts and conduct. Here, Nikko Shonin indicates that the most noble and respectworthy are those who act in accord with what the Daishonin taught. In contemporary times, practitioners who treasure the law more highly than their own lives refers to Presidents Makiguchi and Toda. And I declare that it refers to each of us Soka Gakkai members who have inherited the legacy of these two founding presidents and who strive day and night to achieve Kosen Rufu. In light of this, it is not those who possess power, position or wealth who deserve our respect. Shinichi felt immense love for the members dedicating themselves to propagating the Daishonin's Buddhism despite the undeserved criticism and abuse that rained on them. To him, each of these members was a Buddha. Unfortunately, however, some Nichiren Shoshu priests, logged in a feudalistic mindset over their priestly positions, held the misguided belief that they were superior and the believers subordinate. Even in those days, many priests looked down on Soka Gakkai members and treated them with disdain. Such behavior was slander of the law and a blatant denigration of the Daishonin's spirit. The basis for harmonious unity between the priesthood and laity lies in each side focusing its mind on the one objective of Kosen Rufu. But how could Kosen Rufu possibly be achieved by priests who claimed to be followers of Nikko Shonin, yet showed no respect for those who propagated the Daishonin's Buddhism? As Shinichi spoke, he silently hoped and prayed for the day when the priesthood would awaken to Nikko Shonin's injunction. Article 17. Do not follow even the high priest if he goes against the Buddha's law and propounds his own views. As he went on to explain this admonition, the wartime Shinto talisman incident, which Toda had told him many times, flashed through his mind. In June 1943, the priesthood, having bowed to the Japanese military authorities' demand that it enshrine the Shinto talisman, summoned President Makiguchi, General Director Toda, and other top Soka Gakkai leaders to the head temple. There, in the presence of the high priest, they were strongly urged, "Why don't you in the Soka Gakkai also accept the Shinto talisman, at least for appearance's sake?" The priesthood had first embarked on its ruinous course 2 years ago in September 1941 by issuing a notification advising the deletion of certain portions of the Gosho. Bit by bit, it caved into pressure from the authorities, caring only for self-preservation. Thus, it was only a matter of time before the Nichiren Shoshu priesthood finally descended to accepting the Shinto talisman. Makiguchi, however, bluntly turned down the priest's request that he and the Soka Gakkai do the same. By then, a Shinto talisman was already enshrined in the Daishoin, one of the structures on the head temple grounds that had been requisitioned by the army. However, with the spirit of Nikko Shonin to not follow even the high priest if he goes against the Buddha's law and propounds his own views, Tsunesaburo Makiguchi replied, "I absolutely refuse to accept the talisman." Makiguchi was deeply pained by the great misery and suffering being inflicted on the Japanese people all around him. In the demand that believers in the Daishonin's Buddhism accept the Shinto talisman, he saw a perfect opportunity to remonstrate with the military government, which was running headlong towards the quagmire of war, while promoting state Shinto as the nation's spiritual pillar. Yet, it should not have been left to Makiguchi alone to remonstrate with the authorities. It ought to have been the responsibility of the high priest, the representative of the disciples inheriting the flame of the law from the Daishonin. And, by rights, it should have been the Nichiren Shoshu priests who urged the high priest to do so. However, none felt compelled to remonstrate. This impelled Makiguchi to visit the head temple a second time on June 28th, when he personally rebuked High Priest Nikkyo, insisting that he take a firm stand and remonstrate with the government. Such a course of action, however, was clearly inconceivable to the High Priest, who was terrified of what the military authorities might do. Makiguchi's sincere appeal fell on deaf ears. On July 6th, Makiguchi, Toda and other leaders of the lay organization were arrested one after another. Great persecution had thus fallen upon the Soka Gakkai. Following these arrests, the head temple excommunicated Soka Gakkai members from visiting, out of fear of being associated in any way with the lay organization. These events clearly reveal a high priest who distorted the Daishonin's true preachings and worked to obliterate the great pure law. However, the presence of the Soka Gakkai, the courageous guardian of Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism, ensured that the lifeblood of faith was preserved. It moved Shinichi profoundly to think that Nikko Shonin had foreseen the possible emergence of a high priest who, in spite of his position, would turn his back on the true law and preach erroneous doctrines based on his own arbitrary interpretations. Shinichi worried that such a situation might recur in the future. But on that day, he kept his comments brief. In this article, Nikko Shonin teaches that we must not follow even the high priest should he betray the Daishonin's teachings and the Buddhist law and set forth his own arbitrary doctrines. As he explained briefly the general meaning of the article, he prayed in his heart that the priesthood would not repeat the same mistake and embark on a course ruinously detrimental to the law. Article 18. Even if a view is set forth unanimously by a conference of believers, the high priest should repudiate it if it goes against the Buddha's law. This article is paired with Article 17. Here, Nikko Shonin gives an example of a conference of believers transgressing the teachings of the Daishonin's Buddhism. He instructs that any transgression, even if the entire body of believers should endorse it, must be strictly repudiated. Shinichi Yamamoto paused to sip some water and continued his lecture with great energy. In other words, the essence of the Daishonin's teachings is found only in the Daishonin's own words. This means that we must base ourselves on the Gosho, the writings of Nichiren Daishonin. Since President Makiguchi's time, the Soka Gakkai has made the Gosho its foundation. And because we have practiced in exact accord with the Daishonin's teachings, numerous persecutions have assailed us. As a result, we have been able to read the Gosho with our lives and advance on the correct path of faith as votaries of the Lotus Sutra. For this very reason, the benefit of those who practice faith as Soka Gakkai members is immeasurable. They can amass eternal good fortune and benefit. Let's advance energetically towards Kosen Rufu, making the Gosho a vital part of our lives. Shinichi continued his lecture, steadily progressing through each of the 26 articles. The time had flown by. Glancing at his watch, Shinichi saw that it was already nearly 8:30. "May I continue a little longer?" he asked the audience. "You're not too tired?" The participants assured him they weren't and urged him to continue. "Okay then. There's only the concluding passage left to cover. I have set forth these 26 articles for the sake of the eternal salvation and protection of humankind. Learned priests of later generations must not question these in the least. Those who violate even one of these articles cannot be called followers of Nikko. Nikko Shonin wrote these 26 admonitions for the salvation and protection of the people of the latter day of the law and all eternity. He urges the priests of later generations to observe and practice these precepts, never harboring doubts about their validity. He declares that those who violate even one article are not his followers, and obviously not the disciples of the Daishonin either. True disciples of the Daishonin and followers of Nikko Shonin are those who uphold and implement the spirit embodied in these 26 articles. Herein lies the true lifeblood of faith. It is not to be found in ceremonies or formalistic rituals. Infusing these articles in our hearts, let's strive resolutely from today to propel Kosen Rufu forward with pride and a sense of mission truly worthy of disciples of the Daishonin. The lecture ended after 2 hours. Expressing its approval and fresh determination, the audience broke into loud, enthusiastic applause. Shinichi had succeeded in helping them solidify the foundation of their faith. Though deeply tired, he was filled with a rewarding sense of having accomplished what he had set out to do. He repeated this lecture on August 8 for participants of the second summer training course session. The 8,000 representatives at the training sessions returned to their regions throughout the country in buoyant spirits, recharged and revitalized with the energy of faith. August 14 was a day Shinichi would never forget. On this day in 1947, he met Josei Toda, an encounter destined to change his life forever. On this day in 1960, 13 years later, he attended the second Chubu sports meet at the Mizuho Athletic Stadium in Nagoya. The torrential downpour of the night before, an effect of typhoon number 12, the 12th typhoon recorded that season, had finally cleared, and a slightly overcast sky brought a refreshing coolness to the summer day. The Chubu sports meet kicked off a series of regional sports meets in Japan, leading up to the third National Festival of Youth that September. A similar sports meet also took place that day in Fukuoka, Kyushu, despite the pouring rain. Shortly after 8 a.m., a starting gun resounded above the Mizuho Athletic Stadium. The sports meet began with a magnificent parade of the brass band and fife and drum corps. Then, competitors from the 6 Soka Gakkai chapters in the Chubu region, Nagoya, Meijo, Toyohashi, Shizuoka, Hamamatsu, and Gifu, entered the stadium and the competition got underway. Boisterously cheered on by spectators waving colorful flags and Japanese fans, the youthful competitors ran, leapt, and soared with great vigor. It drizzled from time to time, but the young people did not let this deter them in the least. They continued their strenuous competition, radiating an air of youth, relishing an arduous challenge. Shinichi said to Chubu General Chapter Chief Kunio Shiroya, seated next to him, "Chubu has become strong. You've won." His face showing deep emotion, Shiroya simply said, "Thank you." Shinichi could not forget the nightmarish typhoon that had struck Ise Bay almost a year earlier. This made him all the more overjoyed to see his fellow members in Chubu now beaming with such vitality. On September 26, 1959, shortly after 6 p.m., typhoon number 15 had moved onto land near Shionomisaki on the Kii Peninsula of Ise Bay. The atmospheric pressure at the typhoon center was 929.5 millibars. That's approximately 27.89 inches of barometric pressure. It was a huge typhoon, the likes of which had rarely been seen. Shortly after 8 p.m., Aichi, Mie, and Gifu prefectures were struck by a blackout and pounded by driving rain and gale force winds of more than 100 miles per hour. Windows were shattered, tiles blown off roofs like so many leaves, electric power poles knocked down, and many houses destroyed. Striking at high tide, the typhoon caused the water to rise 5 meters, flooding embankments and swallowing up stretches of coastal area in an instant. On that particular evening, Shinichi Yamamoto, then general administrator of the Soka Gakkai, was at the head temple in Shizuoka Prefecture, part of Chubu region, overseeing that month's pilgrimage. Violent winds buffeted the trees and shrubs in the gardens of the lodging temples. They looked as if they might be uprooted any moment. Shinichi listened with deep concern to radio reports about the approaching typhoon. He wondered if the Chubu members living in its path would be safe. As time went by, the radio reported that the typhoon was causing extensive damage over a wide area. Shinichi could not sleep that night. He was too worried about the safety of the members. The next morning, he thought about traveling directly to Nagoya from the head temple. But because public transportation had been suspended and roads closed, he reluctantly returned to Tokyo. According to the news, the typhoon had wreaked havoc around the country, affecting all areas except Kyushu. Even parts of Tokyo had been flooded. Shinichi immediately set about trying to learn the extent of damage suffered by members nationwide. However, since telecommunication lines were still down in many areas, he could not obtain detailed information from regions subjected to the full wrath of the typhoon. Shinichi's anxiety grew. "I won't know the situation unless I go there myself," he thought. But since he had to coordinate the Soka Gakkai's overall relief efforts, he could not absent himself from the headquarters. Shinichi immediately decided to dispatch several senior youth division leaders to the affected areas, instructing them to take charge of relief efforts there. When he learned that flooding of the Kisogawa and Nagaragawa rivers had cut off road and rail links between Aichi and Mie prefectures, he contacted the Kansai headquarters and requested that leaders immediately be sent from there to Mie for relief efforts. He made all necessary arrangements for aid, calling on fellow members around the country to contribute material support and assistance, then organizing the transportation and distribution of these items. It was not until September 28, 2 days after the typhoon had struck, that telephone links in some areas were restored, and members in the Nagoya area could finally phone the Soka Gakkai headquarters to report the extent of damage. According to these reports, the Minato and Minami wards in southern Nagoya had suffered serious damage and almost the entire area was underwater. Shinichi forwarded letters of encouragement to Takeo Tsuyama, the Nagoya chapter chief, and other central leaders in the disaster area. After receiving reports from the youth division leaders he had dispatched to Nagoya, he declared to enlarge their numbers. Relief activities in Nagoya were conducted from an action center set up at the Soka Gakkai's Aichi Community Center. Youth division members in particular put their day-to-day training to full use. They promptly organized motorboat patrols around the stricken areas, distributed rice balls and other food supplies to disaster victims, and ascertained the safety and well-being of fellow members while offering them encouragement. So efficient was the Soka Gakkai's relief effort that in some of the most seriously affected areas in southern Nagoya, it could extend aid and assistance to storm victims much more quickly than local government and self-defense forces. After setting the overall relief effort in motion, he traveled to Nagoya on October 3rd with General Director Takeo Konishi and Youth Division Chief Aisuke Akizuki. Arriving at Nagoya Station, he immediately headed for the southern part of the city that had experienced major flooding. The damage was far worse than he had expected. As he made his way around the disaster area, his shoes squelched with water and his trousers were splattered with mud. Two or three people recognized him and approached. "Mr. Yamamoto," an elderly man called out. "You're Mr. Yamamoto, General Administrator of the Soka Gakkai, aren't you?" His face looked uncertain. "Hello there," returned Shinichi. "I'm glad to see that you're safe." "You've come all this way to see us?" the man asked, tears welling in his eyes as he gazed at Shinichi. Shinichi warmly encouraged them. "You've suffered a terrible disaster. but your fellow members around Japan are sending their daimoku and praying for your recovery. This is a time of trial. Please triumph over this obstacle with faith." Shinichi then firmly shook hands with each of them. Though they were all standing in muddy water, Shinichi's words, infused with the radiant warmth of his spirit, inspired the members. Their faces glowed with new resolve as Shinichi left. Shinichi then headed for the Aichi Community Center, where an inauguration ceremony had been conducted just that February. Though tiles had been blown from the roof and windows shattered, the center had escaped flooding. That night, Shinichi asked the local leaders to convey the following message to the members. "If you have anything you would like to discuss, please don't hesitate to come and see me at the community center." From early the next morning, a steady stream of members affected by the typhoon gathered at the community center. Some had lost their homes or seen all their possessions washed away in the flooding. Because their clothes were caked with mud and dirt, many stood hesitantly at the entrance of the center, wondering whether they should go in. "Please come on in just as you are," Shinichi urged. He greeted each person as they entered the center's small anteroom and offered wholehearted encouragement. "Even if your homes have been destroyed and your belongings washed away, as long as your faith remains sound, you can definitely rebuild your lives. If you steadily persevere in faith, you will get back on your feet again without fail." What these disaster victims needed now above all was the courage to turn their disappointment and despair into a constructive and positive force. They needed a brilliant ray of hope to enter their hearts so that they could forge the determination to rebuild their lives. Shinichi passionately poured himself into encouraging them. When they had arrived, the members had looked sad and forlorn, their lives devastated by this natural disaster. On their departure, however, they were completely transformed. They now brimmed with fresh resolve, and there was purpose in their stride. That brings us to the end of today's reading. Have a good day.